Chapter 39. A Silk Prison. My elation at seeing my blood father fly off to search for Mam and Aunt Leisha dampens quickly when I realise he's left us alone with the Demarja, and she is not pleased. Selin senses it too. She smells like a trapped hare. Inevra touches one of the charms on her bracelet, activating a ward. A moment later, the doors open and a pair of her eunuch servants appear. The men are thick with muscle, clad in loose black pants and black vests. The golden bands around their wrists and ankles are meant to symbolize subservience, but they glow with magic, empowering the men to enforce her will. Rojva once told me the Dama Ting cut the tongues from their eunuchs, but I couldn't tell if she was serious or just telling ale stories. All I know is I've never heard one speak, and I hear everything. Escort the children to the family residence to await the girl's father and his honour guard. The children. I ain't one for long goodbyes, but the coldness of her dismissal is striking now that Jardir is gone. She doesn't even look at us. I glance at Selin, and I'm relieved to see her tip her head toward the door. We count our blessings and hustle out of the room quick as dignity allows. The twins are waiting when we return to our chambers. Rojva strides up to me, smelling so angry I instinctively turn slippery before I even see the slap, too quick to dodge.
Hey!
Selin barks. Rojva ignores her. The blow slides off my slippery cheek, but she keeps advancing. I stumble back until I sense the wall behind me. Slippery and quick, I could still escape, but Selin is moving our way, and it won't end well if I give her a clear path. I flinch as Rojva raises her arms, but then she throws them around me and pulls me into an embrace.
Psst, Darin! Why didn't you tell us about your mother?
Night.
How did she find out already?
Might as well have, since nobody in this place can keep a ripping secret.
Do not be a fool,
Rojva snaps. Grandmother spoke the news into my earring because I have a right to know. We are family. She means it. She smells protective. Like Selin whenever anyone other than her or Olive tries to bully me. I've never smelled that on Rojva. And instinctively I go solid, returning the embrace. I'm to tell honest word, I always got the impression you and Arik didn't like me.
Of course we don't like you,
Arik says.
Your family.
Rojva laughs. Selin snorts. And for once, even I get the joke. All my cousins on Granda's farm, I don't much like any of them, and the feeling's mutual. But if someone hurt one of them, or the twins, my throat tightens. You're right, I should have told you. I'm sorry. We forgive you. Rojva gives me a last squeeze before letting go. Family does that too. And do not fear. Grandmother told us so that we could provide for you in your time of need. No one else knows. Arik looms at her shoulder. There is no scent of challenge on him now, only sadness.
It will be all right.
The Shah Dharmakar will find them.
I want to believe it, but I remember the field of dead when we found Mam's knife. It's hard to hold on to hope.
The quarters we've been given are fancy, full of silk and velvet and servants to cater to our needs. But even with their wards of silence and alamon powder, I can sense the Demarja's unit guards outside the doors. They'll call it protection, but we all know they're to keep us from going anywhere before Uncle Gary comes to fetch us. And the bunker. But even a silk prison is a prison. And what of Olive? Is she truly a captive in Desert Spear? Across countless miles of sunburnt waste? Once Uncle Garrod gets here, we may never find out. I'm sound asleep when the world fills with fire. Stinging light blazes through my eyelids and my skin feels like someone emptied a boiling kettle on me. I shriek, curling up with my arms over my head as I reach out with my other senses. A rustle of heavy cloth, slippered feet, familiar scents. The serving women have come with breakfast and drawn the morning curtains.
Hi, what in the cause the matter with you?
Selin barks.
Apologies, Highness, one of the women says. We only thought to...
Shut the damn curtain!
I hear the rush of air as Selin throws a pillow clear across the room to thump against the cloth beside the woman.
Can't you see it's hurting him?
Of course, Highness. Curtains rustle, and the light recedes as the women hurry to comply.
What kind of man is hurt by the sun?
One of them whispers, thinking her voice too low to hear.
They say Shah Dharmakar's Greenland blood son was born in the abyss.
The other whispers back.
He has Alagai blood. Everon, preserve us.
I'm not surprised. I heard a palace servant call me Alagai blood once before. I asked Mum about it, and she dragged me back to the brook that same day. Ain't been back since. I hoped the rumours had died away, but in my heart I knew better. The light winks out, and it's like cool water on my skin. I crack my eyes open just as the woman passed my bed of pillows. They draw wards in the air as they pass.
Ah, you've got cheek!
Selin sounds more like a loner berating a servant than herself. She leaps from her own bed of pillows, shouting curses at the women's backs as they scurry out the door. As soon as it closes, she comes over to sit beside me. But she knows me well enough not to touch.
You all right, Darren?
Aye. I groan, but already I'm cooling off, eyes readjusting. Just surprised is all. Don't pay those women any mind, Darren. They don't know you like we do.
Who's we? I ask.
Mam and Leisha are gone, Jardir with them. For all we know, Olive's on the other side of the desert. And no one else who knows me. Slowly, she slides her hand over mine. Not grabbing, not squeezing, just a gentle, soothing weight like a warm blanket.
Why does it burn?
She asks quietly. If anyone else had asked, I would have gotten defensive. But she has that protective smell, and I know I can trust her. I shrug. Reckon it's my demon blood.
That ain't funny, Darren, she says. Dangerous, having folks spread a lie like that.
And a lie, I say. Mum and Dad both ate demon meat. It's why they had powers other folk didn't. Gatherers say you are what you eat.
Folk in Hollow ate a lot of rabbit stew during the war,
Selin says.
Mum and Da love the stuff, but I never touch it. You reckon that makes me part bunny?
Always thought you had long ears, I say. Selin smiles. And a nose that twitches when someone avoids a question. Whatever the reason, I allow, magic clings to the air around me like a stink. Sunlight burns magic away. When the light hits me too sudden, it feels like I'm on fire. If I keep to the shadows and let it burn off gradually, it doesn't hurt as much.
As much?
Selin asks. I shrug again.
Used to it.
Selin squeezes my hand once and gets to her feet. That means it's all right if I crack the drapes enough so I don't trip and break my neck. She's exaggerating, but not by much. The palace curtains are thick, blotting out light almost entirely to aid with horror magic. It's why I was so deep asleep I didn't feel the dawn coming. Aye, go ahead. I squint my eyes and put up a hand as she sends a sliver of hot sunlight slicing across the room. There is a knock at the door soon after, and we open it to find Rojva, Arik, and Abin. The Kafit merchant pushes a cart of food with his ample belly as he walks on his crutches. When the twins make no effort to help him, I hurry over, taking the cart from him.
I am afraid Princess Selin scared away your servants before they could lay breakfast,
Abin says. Rojva's tinkling laugh is triumphant.
It seems you're a princess after all, Selin Var Garrod. We were starting to wonder.
Selin doesn't rise to the bait, but I can smell her irritation.
Who can blame them for opening the curtains?
Arik asks.
It's dark enough for an Alagai in here.
Darren Bales, born in darkness.
Rojva echoes the Demarge's greeting. Together with Arik's demon talk, it puts me on edge. I can never tell when my Krasian cousins are teasing or serious. Steeling myself, I find a steady breath as I walk to the curtains and draw them open myself, pretending it doesn't feel like leaping into a boiling tub as I fill the room with sunlight. I turn and let the fire lance across my back, holding up my arms to stand in the light in front of everyone. Arben coughs gently.
I bring you these as well.
He holds out a tied bundle of black silk.
Warrior blacks.
I've been itching to get out of Arik's garish robes, but I don't understand. Neither does Arik. I can smell his jealousy.
Why does he get blacks?
He's right, I say, before his jealousy can spark into anger. I've never killed a demon.
Shot one, though,
Selim puts in, ignoring my irritated stare. Wrestled one to the ground to keep it from eating your friend.
Whatever your exploits in the night, Arben says, my master deemed them enough to award you these, and his word is law.
He isn't even Krasian,
Arik complains.
The robes should be green, at least.
Perhaps,
Arben agrees, but when you next see him,
explain to the Shah Dharmakar why the Pa Chin's son is unworthy of black robes, and when he is convinced by your wisdom, I will happily procure robes of whatever colour desired.
Arik pales. Arben's words are pleasant, but his rebuke is not. Arben is Kafit, the lowest caste in Krasian society, but he is also rich beyond measure, and when he speaks, it is with my bloodfather's voice. Arik may be half Krasian, but he's even further from the throne than I am. I smell my cousin's shame and humiliation, and can't help but empathize. Arik and I were never friends, not really. Just kids of an age thrown together while our parents had a visit. But I remember his joke about family, and how we don't have to like each other to be on the same side. They won't let Arik take the black because his dad was a famous jongleur. Why shouldn't he be jealous that I get a set just because my dad killed a lot of demons? No, I say. Arik's right. Don't want those any more than this. I lift my foot, showing off a bright orange slipper. I want a proper set of Norzan clothes. Denim breeches, a green shirt, and a soft brown leather jacket with button cuffs. Something about the request turns Arik's scent angry. And while the patient smile never leaves Arben's face, there is surprise in his scent.
When you next see him, explain to Shah Dharmakar.
Cut the demon shit, Arben, I say. My parents never dressed Krasian, and I'm not going to either. Either you get me clothes to replace the ones you all burned, or the next time you see my blood father, you can explain to him why I'm walking around in a Beedo. Arben eyes me, trying to see if I'm bluffing, but I ain't. Mum says Krasians like to play games without telling you the rules.
Got to put your foot down sometimes to keep from getting sucked in.
After a moment, Arben spreads his crutches and bows.
Very well. I will have clothes made for you in the northern style.
Selin quietly clears his throat.
For Selin as well, I say.
Of course, Arben says.
But it will take some time.
I hold up my palms. We got nowhere to be. Arben bows again.
Apologies, son of Arlan, but I'm afraid you do. After you have broken fast, I am to bring you to the Demaja.
Selim perks up at that.
Is there news of Leisha and Mrs. Bales?
Arben shakes his head.
Not that I am aware of. The Demaja has more questions.
Arben has servants rush to the bazaar, reappearing within the hour with a variety of northern clothing for me to choose from while they take measurements for a custom set. The breeches are a bit stiff, but they'll wear in, and the shirt is something like the seventh-day best folk wear back in the brook. I feel closer to regular than I have in months. Yet Arik's angry scent burns my nostrils, laced with jealousy, shame, and resentment. But at whom? I keep looking his way, hoping to catch his eye, but he keeps his head down, giving me no chance. Rojva drifts over,
her scent full of curiosity rather than its typical amusement.
You really don't understand, do you? Her voice is less than a whisper, barely a breath at all.
But it's clear to me.
Understand what?
I whisper. Why your brother's cross with me, even after I took his side?
He did not want you to take his side, Rafer breathes. Don't make sense, I whisper. Said himself we were family, and family sticks up for each other. Sometimes, Rafer agrees, and sometimes we respect each other enough to let them fail with dignity. What does that even mean? I ask.
Rafer shakes her head like I'm the class dunce.
By standing up to Arben where he could not, you only shamed him further. Then you likened Sharoom Blacks to the filth-covered sole of your foot. There can be no greater insult to a warrior.
I pull back, nonplussed.
What?
No mistaking her scent now. She thinks I'm an idiot.
You said you didn't want Sharoom Blacks any more than this, and pointed to your foot. Men have been killed for less.
Horror comes over me as I recall the gesture.
Knight, I only meant the colour. Black, green, orange, they all feel like pretending to be something I'm not.
Rofer throws her head back and laughs, making everyone look up, even Arik. She lays a sympathetic hand on my shoulder.
Oh, cousin, you have so much to learn.
Rofer doesn't say anything to Arik for me. But when Arben appears with an escort of eunuchs to bring us to the Demacia, the twins join us. They walk us not to court, but to the Demacia's wing of the palace, then down into her underpalace, cut deep into the hill upon which the palace stands. The walls throb with magic as we descend below natural light, and I feel wisps of it clinging to me as we pass, restoring the powers that dawn burned away. We descend even further, leaving rich palace halls for tunnels of solid stone cut deep into bedrock and carved with powerful wardings. The air is cold, stale, and stinks of unwashed bodies and despair. It smells like the bunker. Indeed, we find the Demacia waiting in a jail cell, where four Crasian men kneel with black hoods over their faces, bound wrist to ankle. I look at her curiously.
Go on.
Inevra whisks a hand at the men.
Smell them.
I shift uncomfortably, eyeing the door. I don't like being in a cell, especially in a place designed to keep folk like me from getting away. But I know what she's playing at, and my curiosity overcomes my anxious nature. I walk over to the men, sniffing the air. It's been a long time since I found the spore in Lord Arthur's office. It was weak even then, partially absorbed by the alamum powder. But there is a faint aroma of alamum on these men even now. I inhale deeper, sifting for scent markers of diet or habit. Their food is blander than the other tribes, no doubt to mask their scent further. But that is telling in its own way. In this hot dungeon they cannot help but sweat, and that tells me all I need.
It's them, I say.
Selen looks ready to shout, but Inevra raises a hand to stop her.
Are you certain, son of Arlen?
I nod, and Inevra flicks a finger.
A eunuch kicks one of the men onto the floor in front of us. This is Kai Tomoka of the Nanji. Their tribe of watchers once served the Maja, but pledged to your blood father when the Maja fled Sharak Ka to return to the sands. But it seems Nanji honour is thin.
The eunuch produces an Alagai tail, the harsh barbed whip used in Crasian punishment. A single stroke opens a line on the man's back, and I smell fresh blood. But even as he screams, there is a mocking laugh in his throat.
I will go to Everarm pure of spirit, he claims. It was not only the Maja who were betrayed on the Night of Horror.
The Night of Horror was the infamous coup of Jardir's son, Arsome, who had his 12 Dharma brothers, one from each tribe, murder their Damaji to cement his rise to power. Only the Maja brother failed. Inevra flicks a finger again, and the eunuch resumes lashing Tomoka with the alagai tail until the laughter is beaten from him. I flinch with each strike, backing away as the room fills with a nauseating stench of sweat and blood. The others don't seem to mind. Inevra observes with a serene indifference that Rojva does a fair job emulating. Arban studies his nails, even as the Kai's screams ring so loud I fear my eardrums will burst. Selin and Arik watch like hawks. If eyes were a lash, they would be doing the whipping themselves. At last, the Damaja signals the eunuch to stop. Tomoka lies shivering on the ground, still bound wrist to ankle. Blood covers his back and dribbles from his lips as he coughs out a breath. I am going to ask you some questions, Tomoka, Inevra says quietly. I will know if you lie, and all Nanji will suffer. For long moments, the man gasps for breath. Then in a hoarse wheeze, he speaks. I would never lie to Damaja. Near as I can tell, he means it. Where is Princess Olive? Inevra asks. Beyond your reach in Desert Spear, Tomoka says. Shah Damakar's second wife had Dama Ting magic to spirit Olive across the sands. No doubt they have been there for months. Why? Inevra's voice remains placid, but she smells furious. The dice say Olive must shed blood for Maja if Desert Spear is to survive, Tomoka says. Belina told you this? Inevra asks. Were those her exact words? Tomoka nods. And you believed her? Something about the bruised and bloody watcher chuckling sets my nerves on edge. I am Sharum, Damaja. I have learned not to question the Dama Ting when they speak of dice. Not a complete fool, then, Inevra says. And Mika? She fought with surprising skill, Tomoka says. It took two watchers to subdue her, and not without wounds of their own. So she is alive? Inevra asks. Tomoka nods. She proved a valuable incentive for Olive's behaviour. The Maja are without honour, Arik growls. This cannot stand. That is not for you to decide. As if remembering we are still present, Inevra tilts her head in our direction. Her eunuchs move in immediately, ushering us out of the cold stone Nanji cell and escorting us back to our warm silk one. Seems like every time I settle into an evening bath, someone steals my clothes. Only this time I ain't bothered, because the new ones are made to order. Sort of. Aben's seamstresses have given the garments a distinctly Krasian flair. Loose limbs tapering to the tight button cuffs and a matching scarf to keep out dust and sand. They used sturdy northern denim for the breeches like I asked, but unlike the stiff pair from the bazaar, this cloth is already massaged to softness. The silk shirt and bido are a gentle breeze across my skin. The jacket is a brown so dark it is nearly black. It has no collar to put up against the sun, but it buttons tight, and the silk scarf is long enough to cover my head and face if I wish. But even with the trappings of northern style, these are clearly a warrior's garments. They are sturdy and light, meant for protection and ease of movement. Pockets in the lining of the jacket and breeches are meant for armour plates, but I reckon I can find the other uses for them.
I take it the son of Arlan is pleased?
Aben asks, with an exaggerated bow, as I come around the screen. Love 'em, I say. Selin smells equally pleased in her new leggings and coat. No doubt some of the Krasians will be scandalised, but Selin has a better claim to warrior garb than I do. And it seems the Damaja respects that. She's already experimenting with the armour plates.
The young master will be pleased to know that I have also procured him a horse, Aben says. A light Angerian courser like your father's. Barely more than a colt and stronger than a camel.
You will look regal as you accompany your escort back to Hollow.
Don't much care for the sound of that, or of seeing Uncle Garrett. Going home feels like giving up. What home do I have anyway without Mam? The warded children have gone. The brook is too small and isolated. But Hollow, with all its crowds and noise, is worse, and it would be no better here in Crasia. Long as I was with Mam, they were all just places to visit and sit a while. Now I'm going to need to pick one. It's been over a week, with no word from Jardir and no sign of Enevera. They let us stroll around the family wing and the palace grounds with our eunuch escort, but no farther. Our every need is taken care of instantly, except the need for more information or freedom. What does everyone think? I ask, giving a turn in my new clothes.
Gonna leave a lot of doe-eyed girls sighing as you ride by, Selen says. It's a tampweed tail, but I feel my face colour anyway.
You look well enough for a
Cheen peasant.
Rojva brings me back to the ground.
But a man's clothing should shout. These are barely a whisper.
I look down at the muted colours. Unlike the stark black or white of most Crasian clothes, or the flamboyant colours of children and Kefit.
Like it that way.
Arit doesn't smell as angry as he did a few days ago, but neither does he answer. He comes every day with Rojva to join us for meals and walks in the gardens, but he gives all his attention to Selen and his sister.
Appreciate you making our captivity more pleasant, I tell Rojva, but you don't have to spend all your time here if you don't want to.
Rojva laughs.
Is that what you think, cousin? That we visit your silk prison during the day and leave at night?
She shakes her head.
It is you who are visiting ours. In a few days, you will be gone. And the Dharma Ting will drag me back down to the Chamber of Shadows to continue my studies.
And fair. For you or Arik. I poke a finger into a large pocket in my jacket, meant to hold the armor plate that protects my heart. I think of Olive, locked in a tower somewhere. Or any of us. After Arben leaves, Selen paces our chambers like she's about to give a speech before a crowd.
How long do you think this is going to take?
The general's going to be here in a few days and Olive's dad's still at back. Already too long, I say. Doubt it took 2 hours for Bloodfather to fly to the mountains. If there was a city there, he'd spot it faster than a hound sniffs out a rabbit hole in the barley field.
Perhaps Grandfather found this city, but it was only the beginning of the trail,
Rojva says. Or perhaps he found something you did not on the battlefield and is investigating, Arik says.
For going on 10 days without sending word,
it doesn't feel right. You're worried they got him too? Selen's flat tone tells me I'm not the only one thinking it.
Ridiculous, Arik says.
Ahman Jardir is Shah Damakar.
He carries the crown and spear of Khaji. No Alagai can stand against him.
The words are like a cold blade in my heart, and it's a conscious effort to hold back tears.
That's what I used to think about Mam.
But it looks like the Korlings knew she was coming. What if they were expecting Jardir too?
How's that possible?
Selen asks.
Core if I know,
I say. But with every day that passes, it seems more and more like the only answer that makes sense.
All we can do is wait and pray, Rojva says.
Sit on our asses, you mean?
Selen growls.
While Olive, the ripping Duchess of Hollow, is held prisoner.
The Damaja has foreseen the gates of Desert Spear will not open without bloodshed,
Rojva says.
If that is what the gates require,
Arik says,
then we should drown them in treacherous Maja blood.
Aye, maybe, Selen says, but maybe we could just throw a rope over the wall if we weren't locked up.
Arik snorts, but Selen has a point. I've got a knack for squeezing into places other folk don't fit.
Only locked up as long as we want to be, I say.
Aye, maybe you are, Selen says. But I can't slip through the crack under the door or jump out the window without breaking my neck.
It's the moment on the road all over again. Could I have caught Olive's kidnappers if I'd left Selen behind and run on my own? What would I have done if I had? But every day we wait is a day they're trying to force some Marja prince on Olive, Selen says. She's right, I spring to my feet. We've waited enough. Where are you going? Roshva asks as I climb to the wall to a high window, opening it to the cool night air. To see your Tika and get some correspond answers. Roshva laughs. You will not make it to the first hall before her guards surround you. Eunuchs, I sniff. They won't even see me.
I would not be so certain of that, Roshva says. But the eunuchs are servants, not guards.
Those you see only when they strike.